Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 309 of the Roguecast, recorded October 13th, 2020. Hey, we're Klingon, Old Man McGregor.
All right, it is just me and Dave today.
That's right, we took care of Nick.
We did. And by take care, we mean...
Sent him on a vacation.
On a vacation.
Yes, he is at the beach right now.
He's in Port Aransas.
Yep. Which I have been to somewhat recently and was a good time, so hopefully he's having a good time.
I haven't been, but I enjoyed it when I went in the pre-plague times.
Yeah.
I believe he is cooped up in a house with a hot tub and a pool. Like, they're not doing, like, the beach thing or anything. They're staying pretty contained.
I know he took his dog, and his dog got his paws a little hot.
Yeah, paws got burned. Yeah,
but they're okay.
Yeah.
They're off having a fun time, and then we will have a buddy cop team up for the duration of this podcast.
We're here having a terrible time, having to work, slog through the daily grind of running a comics and game shop.
It's true.
Yeah.
We're going to hate each other at the beginning of this buddy cop thing.
Yes.
And then we will love each other at the end.
What?
Just like Riggs and Murtaugh, the romantic couple.
Lethal Weapon 5 got weird. Actually, it did, because Always Sunny in Philadelphia did Lethal Weapon 5, and it was hilarious.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it's great.
How do you mean they did it?
The gang, they basically, as if they
did their
made
own thing?
Their own Lethal Weapon 5.
Oh, that's amazing.
It is amazing and totally worth watching. Anyway, store news this week. There is a couple big notable games. One is Marvel Villainous, Disney Villainous series, which has done really well, which you play the Marvel Disney Villains, has a new Marvel version.
Yeah. And tell me the Marvel Villains you get to play.
So the options are Thanos, of course, Ultron, Killmonger, Hela, and Taskmaster.
You know, the power levels of these are quite disparate,
yes.
But it doesn't really matter for purposes of the game, I believe, right?
Everybody has
their own cool, unique power, right?
I finally got to just play this. So what it is each villain has their own little playmat that they use to go back and forth to make actions. Kind of like Scythe or one of those, where whatever you're on the action gives you a whatever you do.
Right, yeah, you kind of decide what your strategy is and it tracks stuff for you.
You have your own card deck that has little things in it. And then there's a fate deck that you draw from,
mm-hmm.
and you draw those. You can get heroes to, like, throw at the other villains and that
okay.
kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there are events that popped up. There was the event we have is like a vibranium shortage where everything costs one more.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you overpower the event, then you get some kind of boon. So, like, you can throw your minions at it. I played Ultron. I wanted to play Killmonger, but my set unfortunately came with two Thanoses instead.
No!
So I'm waiting to get my Killmonger deck. But I went in and played Ultron. My son played Taskmaster. It's a lot of fun. I really like it. I recommend it.
What's the running time on a game like that?
I think it was two-player, and we were learning it, but we watched the video to learn it, which is the way to go.
Yeah.
And I think not kind of learning time, it was probably like 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay, that's pretty brisk.
Quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also have Here to Slay, which is a card game of like putting together your adventuring party by the guys who did Unstable Unicorns and... I think it's Unstable Unicorns.
Yeah, I know because somebody came in specifically looking for it the other day, and they said there's some kind of game. He's like, it had the word party in it. It's from the guys who made Unstable Unicorns. And I did not know this well enough to know what that was, but with a little bit of Google foo, I was like, oh, okay, here's what it is. Hey, we have it.
Yep.
So all was well.
And then we just now got in the Critical Role minis.
Yeah, they look good.
So they're unpainted miniatures. It's a set, and it is all the characters from, I guess, the first season of Critical Role.
Okay.
But yeah, those are the same guys that do Dungeons and Doggies and Cats and Catacombs or whatever.
Okay.
Little fantasy dog and cat minis that we should be getting later this week.
Hell yeah.
So that's cool.
It's time.
Yeah.
We can make them fight. They will destroy the Critical Role people. Because
yes.
If the Critical Role people kill dogs and cats, that's it. I'm done with them.
That's true. All right, moving on to news. There was some notable news this week. There is a Lumberjanes animated show in the works for HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
I had forgotten Noel Stevenson, who was one of the co-creators of Lumberjanes, is the person who did Princess or She-Ra.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So it sort of makes sense. She moved into animation, and then she's like, oh, by the way, I have this thing I created. We can do animation of that. And they're like, let's do that.
Yeah, and Lumberjanes looks is like seems like it's ready-made for animation.
Yeah, it's like girls' supernatural adventure, Girl Scout kind of thing.
Something like that?
Yeah.
I have seen the first season of She-Ra and thought it was really good, so...
It's on my list. It's on my list.
But yeah, that bodes well. If I'm not mistaken, Lumberjanes is, like She-Ra, very queer-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not like it's... So having watched the first season, I can say it's not exactly front and center in there, but it's just kind of subtly supported throughout, I guess I'd say. And I probably more overtly later, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I dig that. I like these sort of a new generation of cartoons popping up where it's just a norm for them, you know?
Like it should then be. HBO Max also gave a green light, a series order to Green Lantern, so that's going to happen.
Yep. And then they named the Lanterns who were at least initially so, going to be the sort of the mains.
Yeah, so it's Guy Gardner, Jessica Cruz, Simon Baz, and Alan Scott, the sort of gay version of him from Earth 2.
Yep.
He is also Earth's first Green Lantern, so I think they're going to go a sort of like a they mix and match. He's going to be like the Golden Age Green Lantern, but... And then
I wonder if they're going to do like they did on... What's the new CW show? It's...
Stargirl?
Stargirl.
Yeah.
Where the Golden Age was like 20 or 30 or 40
years
ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
And not like in the 1930s.
I think that's probably like...
Eventually we're going to have to stop sending our heroes up against Nazis.
Yep.
We have new Nazis for
the fight. No, we're not.
We're getting there, yeah. Okay, yeah. All right, old-time Nazis is what we're going to be done
with. Yeah, new, modern, fresh Nazis.
Yeah, we'll have those ready for punching.
Yeah.
But They did suggest, I think, in the little write-up I saw, that they were going to focus on the history of the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
That is to say, you know, I expect, you know, the immediate thing when something like this gets announced and they're using some of the more recent characters that aren't beloved yet, that everybody's like, where's my guy? Somebody's like, they want Kyle, they want Hal, that, you know...
I'm a little surprised there's no Kyle. Have we ever seen him in a live action?
I don't think so. But I suspect we will see them, so don't panic, everyone. And also, so I am not the biggest fan of either Jessica Cruz or Simon Baz, although I did like bits and pieces of that comic. I liked them as sort of a buddy group.
I like the idea.
But here's the thing. I think, honestly, a hindsight 2020 TV show with some actors to bring the charm that sometimes, you know, like, it's its own X factor. That own, it's something magical an actor can bring. That could bring those characters to life.
So the writers are Seth Graham Smith.
Okay.
He worked on the Lego Batman movie, which is good. Worked on Dark Shadows, not quite as good. He wrote the novels Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, who's that guy, huh?
He was a producer on the It movies and on the reboot of Child's Play. So he's very hit and miss, but he's been good.
Yeah.
And then Mark Guggenheim, who worked on Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow and co-wrote the Green Lantern film starring Ryan Reynolds, but he can't really hold that against him because Jeff Johns did that too. And there was a lot of fail in that movie, despite the fact that we're putting good people in it.
It sounds to me like, so far, this basically could go either way.
Yeah.
It could be good.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like some abomination or anything. Like, I don't think HBO is going to make that.
No, I think it's worse to be boring.
Right. I think it's got potential. I'd like for the first real shot at Green Lantern, maybe. You know, I guess the movie was the first shot. I'd like the second real shot to be good.
Yeah, same. I would really like them to get it right.
Yeah.
They announced Doctor Strange is going to guest star in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, that weirded people out a little bit, although they've been getting a little more guest starry with things. Well, Thor Ragnarok was a de facto Hulk movie.
And also Doctor Strange was in that. Doctor Strange also, I mean, he makes sense to guest star in Spider-Man. He's been... In the comics,
well, it suggests Spider-Man. That because his next movie is like the multiverse thing,
yeah.
Are they setting up the Spider-Verse? I mean,
people were guessing that
surely,
it was Spider-Verse, and that
surely
would be
some
cool.
Hint of it, or if not an overt thing. Rainey, you and I talked about this the other day that neither of us are the biggest fans of the Doctor Strange movie. Don't hate it or anything, but it's just not our favorite of the Marvel movies.
Agreed.
But we like him quite a bit in his guest starring roles. Whether it's in, like, Avengers Endgame and all of that, or what else does he show up?
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, like, I love pompous, showing up, very powerful Doctor Strange.
Same here. I like guest star Doctor Strange.
In fact, yeah, I guess he's one of those characters who I usually don't want Doctor Strange comics because they end up boring me to tears.
Yeah.
But when he's part of another group, like the Defenders, or he just shows up to guest star and help him with some magic stuff, I love him.
I almost wonder...
He's a guest star.
I almost wonder, given the end of Spider-Man Far From Home, if he's going to go to him and be like, hey, can you erase everybody's memories?
honestly, God, that would make sense. They could... He's like, well, we can do it, but we have to sacrifice your Aunt May. And then they do this, the Mephisto
oh, no,
story.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I'm surprised I haven't heard more people speculating on that.
I think it's the Spider-Verse thing. That's the most obvious thing.
Yeah, but I bet there might be something to do with that.
And maybe just make a joke. He's like, can you erase everybody's memories?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I don't do that.
Yeah, sort of a... Yeah, you'd have to sacrifice something, and then it could be really horrible.
Yeah. Kate Mulgrew of... Yes.
Star Trek Voyager. Yep.
Is going to reprise her role as Janeway in the animated Star Trek Prodigy, which is on Nickelodeon.
This is their Avatar-esque show. Or that is to say, it's going to try and land, I think, somewhere in that action-adventure category.
You mean Avatar Last Airbender. When you said Avatar-esque...
You thought the blue people?
I went to the blue people, and I'm like, that's weird.
Nah, Last Airbender.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yes. If it helps, like, Dragon Prince, Voltron, all of that stuff.
Yeah,
anything
yeah, yeah.
That's got some of the creators from those shows.
Okay, well, now I'm interested.
And the thing that interested me... it's another one of those where, kind of like the Green Lantern movie, they're like the pedigree of the guys who are like the showrunners, who I think might be two brothers, is a little hit and miss, but very particularly they wrote the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which was one of my kind of favorite movies of the last year.
Yeah.
So,
and an all-ages thing, right? That's sort
yeah,
of a...
Yeah, if they can find that sort of sweet spot.
Okay, so the premise, that's right. This is a group of teenagers who find an abandoned starship to search for adventure. By the way... I know that it's a like post-capitalism, post-scarcity future.
Yeah.
We're just leaving starships around? Is that just a thing?
Yeah, you know.
It's like they found a bike.
Kirk and Picard and them guys found like about a million things that could kill off everybody on a starship and just leave it a husk. The kids just happened to find one where they didn't pull off a Kirk.
Like, hey, what's all this blood in here? Oh, don't worry about it. It's our starship now.
Yeah. Yeah, they just play video games on it actually all day long and on the holodeck. the premise sounds a little weird to me. Like it doesn't quite sound Star Trek-y. Kids running around in a starship.
It's a little weird.
But I assume it's not like a giant starship that's normally a crew of 1,000 people. I assume it'll be more like the Reliant, you know, where it's like supposed to have a crew of like 30 and they're, you know, 5 kids could run it. And of course, no one knows yet exactly how Janeway, what her role will be. We know she's going to be some kind of mentor to the kids.
What if it's the Voyager? They finally pop back in, Janeway's the last survivor, and these kids are like, hey, can we use your ship? She's like, yeah, sure, whatever. At this point, fine.
They already made it back.
Did they make it back?
They made it back.
I didn't see the end. Spoilers for Voyager.
Yeah, spoiler for I have this feeling it's going to be something like... This is pure guesswork, but Randy, do you remember ages ago they did a Knights of the Old Republic comic where there were like some Padawan Jedi that were on the run because there was like a conspiracy at that time in the ranks of the higher Jedi
they've been
to kill them
for murder, yeah,
yeah, yeah, and they were being hunted.
Yeah,
I bet these kids are going to have stumbled onto some secret where they can't just say, oh, let's just go to Starfleet or whatever and talk. And I think like Janeway is going to be like someone who takes a special interest in their story, or you know, in some way she gets involved. And I think it's going to be, if I had to guess, in communication with them or hologrammed onto their bridge on the regular, and will advise them as sort of a mentor parent figure.
What if if she's hunting them like Ahab?
I hate children.
I'm gonna get those kids.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I'll get those meddling kids if it's the last thing I do.
Yes, and the old man McGregor from Scooby Doo will also be on there, just like, randomly him and Sonny and Cher.
They weren't Klingons; it's old man McGregor.
There's a lot of shape changers.
Yeah,
it's not old man McGregor; it's Odo from Deep Space Nine. what were we talking about?
Star Trek.
Yes. So I was actually very happy to hear this. So just. As an aside, I know that behind the scenes that when Seven of Nine came onto Voyager in like the fourth season, I think, that it created like the friction on the set, I think, from then onward, because Janeway went from being the big star of the show to very much sort of second, playing second banana to Seven. And I think there was a rivalry between them that I think was not like real nice.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how much was on them, how much was on the show, who were just like, you know, were the show people just like, younger and sexier, that's what we need.
Right.
Or was it a natural evolution and it sort of helped, you know, goose the show when it was kind of getting into a slump? In any case, I'm pleased now that both of these sort of, effectively the two leads, Seven got her, has a major role on Picard now, and it sounds like Janeway is going to get to be in a major role on what's it called? Prodigy. Well, Prodigy? Yeah. They announced it at, like, the New York Comic Con virtual panel stuff that they did.
Okay.
And they had Kate Mulgrew on, and she seemed very enthusiastic and was like... it is interesting, though, she, like Patrick Stewart, when they pulled him back to Picard, was initially kind of, like, not interested.
Yeah.
It sounds like... Yeah, I know that when you get into Trek, I think it kind of consumes your life. Like, it's like... Then you have to start... Even if you're not... Don't do the convention circuit... There's all these, like, kind of pressure from all sides. There, you are part of this massive franchise. It sounds like a little bit... It's a big deal if you do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, she was very into it. She's enjoying doing the voice acting, she said, and seemed, like, super enthused. So I have hopes for it. I like Janeway as a captain.
Yeah. Tom Taylor, store hero and favorite.
Yeah, he of deceased at DC and
Seven Secrets over at Boom.
He did Suicide. He's been doing a good Suicide Squad run. Yeah. Oh, his big thing was he made his name on Injustice.
Yeah,
the book that was so much better than it had any right to be. That it was like the best DC running, and it wasn't even in DC's. It was in a video game universe. Yeah.
So he and artist John Somariva have they have like a bidding war for their new YA graphic novel series. Called
I'm gonna have a bidding war over my stuff.
I know.
Jesus.
He hasn't either. He was talking about how crazy it was.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, so it landed at Penguin Random House. Basically, it's focused on the last of the Lost Boys, who lives in a Neverland, has become a war zone after Peter Pan mysteriously vanished.
Mm-hmm.
He and the other runaways join forces with Tinkerbell and her pixie army in order to protect Neverland from a pirate invasion.
That sounds
fun.
Like, it's the kind of thing that could be schlocky, but I know the merit he brings to things, and I think it's going to be good.
The character designs look good.
So this is a YA graphic novel?
YA graphic novel.
Okay.
Summerina has worked on Star Wars Adventures, Batman TMNT.
Okay.
So yeah, he's got
good pedigree.
Yeah, so a 2-book thing coming out from Penguin, so that's cool.
Nice, yeah. Congrats to Tom Taylor. I would look forward to that.
Okay, we got the teaser trailer for Invincible over on Prime.
Yep. That is Robert Kirkman's Invincible.
Yep.
For those who haven't seen it, it was a comic that ran, a long time alongside Walking Dead and ended a little bit before it, maybe?
Yep.
That was about a teenage superhero who was, like, almost like a Superboy type who found out that he was, you know, his father was essentially their world's Superman. Only the very quickly revealed twist, which I think will be probably quickly revealed on the show, was that his father kind of came from a race of conquerors and was basically on Earth to scope it out for invasion.
For invasion, yeah.
And then he has to make some choices, and that's just really the start of the series, which kind of walks somewhere between a sort of, you know, adventure with, like, this familial drama and sometimes being quite violent. It uses a lot of pastiche characters also from, like, Marvel and DC types. Like, there's an Aquaman type.
Yeah.
There's even, like, some Watchmen types as part of an opening murder mystery. And I don't know quite how they will do that on the show, but, you know, it feels like it's in a big shared superhero universe, even though it's an original one.
I like this. I think none of us followed it all the way to the end.
Yeah. It got weirdly violent.
I heard it had a good ending.
I think I heard that, too. And knowing kind of Kirkman's strengths, I can see it, but... I think we were both agreeing, because they put together a good trailer, which has very nice animation,
really good,
that this might be one of those hindsight 2020 things where they have taken something that had lots of merit in it, but overall wasn't quite for us, and they might have made it into something that is.
Well, they may do what they did with the Boys. Where I don't really like the Boys comics all that much, but I really like the Boys show. So I'm hoping for a similar... I own a half of Invincible. And this is the thing that might get me... If the series is good, it might be going to go and finish it up now that it's done.
Yeah,
I need to know things are ended.
Put some money in Kirkman's pocket.
Exactly.
He's going to go broke otherwise.
Yes, that poor guy.
I suspect people are going to dig this. And if you haven't seen the trailer, you should take a look at it.
Yeah.
You might like it.
And the last thing, there was a New York Comic Con, not actual Comic Con, but like the virtual Comic Con.
Yeah.
Feature it on the new MODOK thing at Hulu.
Right.
Which is being done by Patton Oswalt, and I forget who the other guy is.
Right.
But,
It's animated. Is it... I forget. Is it, like, stop motion? They, like, use miniatures and stuff.
It's weird. It looks like Robot Chicken action figure stuff.
Right. That's what I thought
it
sort of was.
But I think it's CGI.
He was talking... I watched a little bit of a video, and he was talking about how they were, like, hand-stitching parts of, like, the little costume stuff.
It's weird.
It is weird-looking.
I don't like the look of it.
And I don't think either of us were, like, super into the comedy of it, which is weirdly close to an idea that we once actually dabbled with, but it's kind of, they took it in a lamer direction.
Yeah, ours was cool.
Ours was cool. But it is AIM, you know, the evil science organization that MODOK runs.
Yep.
It's basically that as, like, office workplace comedy kind of thing. And I guess, you know, there's also a reveal that MODOK has, like, a family. He's got little, his wife, MODOK, and kid MODOK.
MODOKlings.
And they're going to get, like, bought up by, like, some tech company that is like, hey, if you can get out the iPhone on time, we'll, you know, you can go ahead and make your laser death guns, too, and stuff. It could be good.
It could be.
Harley Quinn surprised us.
I like Patton Oswalt. Yeah, that's true. Harley Quinn did surprise
the
us.
The clips, and that was one where early on the clips didn't look so good.
That's true.
That said, I don't particularly have any interest in this one.
No, me neither.
It's just
going to
be its own standalone goofy thing, right? It's not part of the lineup that's like all their
new
movies
Marvel
and stuff.
Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's all spinning out of MODOK.
But maybe you might dig it, and there is a... There's, like, a long featurette on it where they talk about it, they show clips, and there's sort of, like deeper dives into exactly what they're doing. So.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I had it on in the background while I was, like, cooking or something like that, so I heard bits and pieces. Oh. I wasn't watching it so much as listening to
it. I only watched the first, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, they keep on going.
Oh,
they just
keep going.
They won't shut up. It's, like, half an hour long. By the way, this was not on our list, but I did want to just kind of mention it in sort of the larger context of things. There's a new trailer for the Stand on CBS All Access, which is about to... That's going to change up its name. What's it becoming? Paramount Plus?
That's not until next year.
Yeah. But anyway, and I thought it was a pretty good trailer. It's one of those ones where I can't quite take its measure just from the trailer. Like, they cut around enough that I couldn't tell. But so they're adapting Stephen King's The Stand, I think, as a miniseries, and it definitely looks like they've got some good stuff going on it, if people want to check the trailer. But I mention it because there's Star Trek Discovery Season 3 is also about to start up this very week. It's on Thursday, which is crazy, and I'm super looking forward to that. You know, and there's, like, Lower Decks, Picard will get a new Season 2. If people are thinking about CBS All Access, it seems like it's kind of gearing up for some more stuff.
Also, The Good Fight. There are 4 seasons of The Good Fight, and it's great.
Yeah, that is for sure on my to-watch list soon. Yeah.
If you like The West Wing, you should watch The Good Fight.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, that's it for news this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics the week of Wednesday, October 14th, and we're closing on the end of the year.
I guess.
It's going to be time for me to make my best of list.
Oh, my God. you know what? I actually, I don't know where it'll end up, but there's one book today that I quite enjoyed, a little franchisey comic that could show up on that list if it continues unabated.
Oh, by all means.
With its quality.
Yep.
Do we want to dive in with
it?
Okay.
Yeah.
They put out a Warhammer 40K comic from Marvel, who is now... Marvel is now acquiring all the big franchise license. So they got Star Wars. They're going to get...
They've got Conan.
Alien and Predator. Basically, they completely pillaged Dark Horse.
And here's the thing. They should, because they... I mean, for all the Dark Horse did very well by all these licenses.
Yeah.
But Marvel puts, like, A-list talent on them.
Yep.
And always does really impressive stuff.
That said, I don't think their Conan has achieved the heights of BCX Conan.
It is not.
But they definitely found their own groove and they did their own thing. And although there have been good Warhammer comics before, Randy, was it Boom who had them previously? Like, you know, 10, 15 years ago? That first batch was from Boom, I think.
Yeah.
And then they bounced around a little bit, like Titan had them at one point. And then there was enough crappy ones in there that the initial quite good track record of them became extremely muddy. So I am pleased to say that Marvel's first issue, written by Kieran Gillen, no less, like a total A-list writer, the guy who's like behind Wicked and Divine.
But also a huge gamer nerd.
And he's a big gamer nerd, like a Warhammer 40K guy in particular.
He probably begged for this assignment.
This is written by a guy who knows his stuff, and it kind of feels like it. It reminds me of some of the stuff I like about the novels, especially in the sense that it takes, like, so this is a story about the, one of a very specific hero in the Ultramarines chapter, which is like In a lot of ways, that's the basic bitch of the Warhammer 40K line. They are the ones in blue, the big armored Terminator armor dudes that you see in blue, and they are the most basic sort of stalwart heroes of the Imperium. But as anybody who's like, if you really read any of the lore, even ones like that have some pretty good backstory written into it, and I think he's kind of tapped into that. So this is a big hero named Marnius Kalgar. I believe he is the first guy to become a Primaris Space Marine, which was like a new kind of uber Space Marine that they introduced, I want to say like 5 or 6 years ago, something like that. Honestly, it came close to when our store was getting out of the business, but they... and it's set in and around, was it McCrag? That area. And it follows, it jumps around in time, and it follows both like sort of a current sort of defense of it, as well as a flashback to his backstory when he was a kid. And there's like interesting stuff throughout. Even though in a lot of ways, yes, he is like a, he's a stalwart soldier guy.
Yeah.
But like they immediately have him playing off of, he's got like one of those Adeptus Mechanicus, kind of the weird tech priest guys, who's kind of a slightly stammery guy trying to get, who keeps getting interrupted when he's trying to like talk through his thing. But is also, you know, in the style of the weird tech priest, he's, when he's asked to take on a task, to him it's like he's been granted some boon from the gods, and he's like super excited about it. Every few pages they drop some cool bit that looks like a data slate from the 40K universe that shows like here's the area of the galaxy this is in. There's some little bits and pieces on the planets there, and all sorts of actually interesting background on this like agriculture world that's been overrun.
Yeah,
like the fact that most people like, or I think this was like written as like a compliment. It's like people live there to the ripe old age of their 30s.
I saw that.
Oh my god,
that was a great little bit.
There is a fair amount of that dark Warhammer humor in here, but it's not. It's dark, but it's not quite bleak.
It's also like, not like Warhammer can sometimes read almost as parody,
right?
And this is taken fairly seriously.
Yeah, no, he does not. Although there may, you know, there's some quotes in it, and they always have these in the books that are like the quotes of the Imperium. They're like axioms,
yeah.
And they're somewhere between ridiculously metal and ridiculously fascist. They'd be things like "Don't think, just fight," and things like that. You know that they're supposed to be like warm the hearts of Space Marines, but to any normal person would be like, "Oh my god, that's horrible." Incidentally, by the way, art by Jason Burroughs, doing really probably his best work I've seen from him. This is Jason Burroughs who did the Lovecraft stuff with Alan Moore over at Avatar Comics, and there's big battle stuff in here. But it's as much about like him interacting with his tech priest, him as a child of privilege, right?
Yeah.
So he's like a privileged kid, but who kind of seems a little bit sort of mature beyond his years, who takes on his... Randy, are they like his sort of servants? They call them helots, like in a reference to like Greek... Sort of that Greek tradition.
I couldn't tell if they were supposed to be like house servants or because they almost seem like friends in some way.
Yeah,
but they definitely have a lower caste.
They got pulled in to train with him, and they're training under a guy who was like a failed attempt at a Space Marine, who's like this very cool looking grizzled dude with like, you know, he looks like he stepped out of Road Warrior, but with cyborg parts. And it's kind of funny. He like takes him to these beyond the city gates, and he's like, "Now, most people die here." he's like, "They just can't outrace the..." And he says the name of some creature.
Yeah.
And he like closes the gate, and they're like, "Did he say, what do you call it?"
Yeah,
and then this giant monster comes raging at them, and then it cuts away. And I guess we're going to find out in the next issue if they deal with it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, like a subplot is unfolding with where we're finding out more of the nature of the heretic invasion on McCrag.
Yeah.
That's the main plot. We're finding out... who's behind it before the book is out. And it's one of those where just like every few pages had something cool going on, or like a fun scene, or kind of darkly funny. And it I think struck just the right tone. I think of my favorite characters from the books I've read, and they're like an Inquisitor guy and that cowardly Commissar dude from the Imperial Guard, and all that. And I sort of would prefer that the initial comics had been from them, but once they've got the license, those are mini, do miniseries, do, yeah. you know, whatever you want.
Yep.
Is, well, by the way, is this a miniseries or is it not?
This is a miniseries.
Okay, that makes sense. It feels like it's going to have a story to tell and then it'll be done.
Yeah, I do wonder, like, what Marvel's plan on. Is this a flyer to see if there's any interest, or is this a, are there going to be more? Because they only launched with the one, so
you know
we'll
what?
See.
Boom did something that was kind of clever, as I recall, is all of their stories were standalone, but you started to realize after you were reading them that it's like, oh, the events of one are like a factor into another. Like, mm-hmm. say they raise some planet of heretics. Well, the fallout of that is like would it be happening in another storyline.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do really like the Warhammer 40K universe, and just for, if people don't know, it's a kind of Dune-influenced, you know, it's built to support the miniature war game, so it's like a future of war between aliens and humans, and the humans are, like, very much zealots, and they're, like, it's hard to find any, like, straight-up heroes except maybe the Tau.
Right.
But it is also has that trademark sort of British self-awareness about its own fascism, and there's a dark sense of humor to it, there's all kinds of cool art. And a rich history that's been, like, written over the course of the last few decades and refined. So it is a cool setting, if a little drenched in testosterone.
Yeah.
But I think, basically, if you're in any way, shape, or form a Warhammer fan, you're going to want to try this out.
Yeah, I actually, I've not ever really played the war game, but I did play a little bit of the RPG.
You played the RTS, right?
And played the RTS, yeah. And I've read some of the comics and stuff. The comics always make me interested in the world. Like, I really like the world as much for fiction. And this was a good starting.
Yeah.
There's a new book from Aftershock this week called We Live. That is a very strange. It's by the Miranda Brothers. It is a sort of post-apocalyptic. Earth has been taken over by like a virulent nature. And
yeah, there's been like ecological collapse.
Yeah. So it opens with like a little. Civil defense announcement, like a little video presentation.
Was that like a little Mr. DNA
yes,
from Jurassic Park?
Where they talk about, you know, we were about to be extinct, and then we wound up having to fight against the climate change, and then these new species and nature, and then a big, giant, worldwide civil war, and the new world and all this stuff. And basically, the premise is that an alien race sent down a message that say, hey, you're all going to die. We're going to take 5,000 children, and we're going to extract them to this alien world.
Where they'll be safe, right?
Where they'll be safe. Well, they don't say that.
Oh, okay.
I'm wondering if that's the twist.
Maybe so, but it is considered right now for people on Earth the one last hope of like where you could get your kids off.
So they drop these rescue bracelets, and they guarantee the rescue of one child, and the child has to get the bracelet and go to one of the beacons are inside the 9 major megalopolises, and there's also these outlier areas where they say they're offering transportation services for disadvantaged citizens, which is like buses and trains and stuff.
Yeah.
So this starts in those disadvantaged, like, nature areas where a brother and sister, her brother has one of the bracelets, and she's going to take him via bus and train to his drop-off point.
Are they young? They're young?
Yeah.
I mean, they're both kids.
They're young kids. They're young preteens, I think.
Okay.
They meet up with some other kids and adults. They're you know, on their way via, like I say, bus and train. They run afoul of some creatures. It's interesting. It's a really fun, different concept.
See, now that post-apocalyptic stuff isn't usually fun, but this has like a lighter side to it, or
I mean,
an adventurous side.
It's not like super light. It's, oh well, the world is gonna die. But like the kid wants to be a superhero, and he has like this weird cat helmet that's like an X like battle helmet that somebody basically activates for him. So he's like got this weird like VR mode that he can see everything in.
Okay,
it's really good. And the art is spectacular.
Yeah,
it's really
through it. And the art looked really nice.
So definitely worth a look if you have any fondest sort of post-apocalyptic type stories. Speaking of sort of post-apocalyptic, although not set up that way. Commanders in Crisis is the new Image book by Steve Orlando, who worked on Nightwing and some other stuff.
And this actually is, in its way, a Image comic acknowledgement or homage to the like Crisis on Infinite Earth type event from DC.
To some extent. So it starts off, and I don't want to give away the big twist, although there is a twist. But basically, it's a team of like 6 superheroes who have pretty cool powers. There's a guy When they do that big dull page splash of them fighting these weird time travel villains, I'll just read them off. There's Originator, who innovates vocabulary and alters reality. Sawbones, action surgeon. Prize Fighter, as strong as the crowd hopes he is. And Seer, quantum god, 1 minute at a time.
Okay, these are Grant Morrison type ideas.
They are. This feels almost like a Champions game.
Yeah.
It's like people were like, oh, I want to make this weird character. And I will say, I think I wish that the moment of writing was stronger, but as an idea, I kind of like it, and they're definitely different superheroes.
Yeah.
And then there's a big twist at the end as to why these six heroes, what is going on. There's a murder mystery that's leading into the main story. So if you're interested in a alternate take superhero, I would definitely give it a look. Dave, you read Rorschach, which came out this week.
Yeah, I actually don't know, Randy. This is a DC Black Label miniseries, obviously following up or has a story to tell about the famous Watchmen character.
Yep.
Is this part of an overall initiative, or is it just its own standalone mini?
I have no idea.
I think it's just a standalone mini.
I think so, too.
It's written by Tom King, and whereas most of the other comics that they did were, like, flashbacky ones, only the HBO miniseries was about, like, the present, or what would be the present in that Watchmen timeline. This also seems to be set in the present. And it is at least starting out, is essentially a murder mystery where Rorschach is kind of in the background for it. And it's told from the perspective of, like, a police detective and, like, an FBI guy he's working with. I don't know if I mentioned Tom King writes this.
You
Tom
did.
King, who's A-list, the A-list writer of right now. Well, he wrote Batman for years. Strange Adventures, Vision, Mr. Miracle, all that stuff. And this has his kind of trademark sophistication of story. Which is to say, in one issue, I don't know quite what's happening. It is actually straightforward enough in that there's there's someone in a Rorschach costume or maybe the real thing, who is like an old man who's like in his 80s. So like, could if somehow he had survived the graphic novel, which he didn't, but if somehow he had or was reconstituted,
yep,
that'd be about his age. But he gets killed in the beginning literally on the first page. At a presidential rally, and I can't remember, it's not for Robert Redford, but it's like, I think maybe for the guy running against him, and he gets killed, and there are some other weird circumstances around it, and as the book goes on, it begins to explore the sort of labyrinth of exactly what happened that night, how it relates to the sort of like the myth of Rorschach, whether there's any possibility it actually is Rorschach, and there's like wheels within wheels on this one. The art is super nice. It is somebody, Jorge Fornes?
I don't know
how you say it, but yeah. Dave Stewart on the coloring. It is, you know, Tom King works with really good artists. This guy is an A-list artist. He actually reminds me of, who's the guy who drew, David Lloyd? Is that the guy who drew
V for Vendetta?
It has a little bit of that, a little bit of John Cassaday look to it, too. Anyway, it is a little bit weird that, although we see sort of maybe Rorschach once or twice in it, this doesn't seem to necessarily be the, you know, this isn't a Rorschach versus thugs story or whatever. But it was interesting, and I want to see where it's going. It's definitely enough for me to keep on checking it out at this point, and I figure, like, yeah, at this point people kind of know whether or not they like this Watchmen side projects or have an interest. But I would say Tom King is probably a writer strong enough to be worth a look. Randy, did you read this that Vault Comics book, The Devil's Red Bride?
So I sort of skimmed it. I know Anna was really on board.
Yeah, she was.
It is a samurai book.
Yeah, samurai revenge tale.
Yeah, it's got nice art.
And I think there's like a little bit of supernatural stuff in it. Samurai books are a little bit few and far between, so if people have an interest in the genre, check out The Devil's Red Bride.
Also, those of you who are Gerard Way fans or are waiting for more Umbrella Academy, he's brought back his other property, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys, which I can't ever get the sense of, like, this is almost like a superhero racing book. It's weird. It's very strange. It's even stranger than Umbrella Academy. It's got cool sort of pop art. But there's a new series of that out.
Let me ask Randy, for anybody who might want to backtrack, are the True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys original trade paperbacks available?
There's only just one.
Okay, is that available?
Yes, I believe we have it.
Cool. So in case people want to backtrack.
Also, Amazing Spider-Man 49/850 was last week.
Yep,
crazy number. This week, it's Amazing Spider-Man number 50.
Crazy number.
Yeah. So this is The Last Remains Part 1. This is the start of the story. They finally reveal who Kindred is, who's the guy been pulling all the strings behind the scenes.
Oh, is he not just some new character called Kindred?
Nope, there's a reveal as to who he is.
Is it like as if he was like Jack-O-Lantern or something
exactly,
like that?
Exactly, something like that.
Got it.
Sin Eater and Norman Osborn are in this.
Should I just keep throwing out names until I get
nope.
it?
Nope. Spidey is having his... Spidey goes to Doctor Strange for help, and he's got all, like, Silk and Spider-Woman and Miles Morales are all in here.
Oh, yeah, I know that they kind of were making a thing of bringing in, like, the Spider-Verse-y type.
Yeah, it's like a team book. Anyway, it's really fun.
You've been warming to the Nick Spencer stuff.
So. Yeah, I've sort of warmed up to it, and I think you don't have to have been reading it previously, although if you have and you've been waiting on the reveal of Kindred, it is in this issue.
Nice.
That's the big stuff. I did want to mention a couple other things. Seven Secrets number 3 is this week. I really like that. New issue of Immortal Hulk, which continues to be great, and a new issue of Marvel Zombies Resurrection, which I'm continuing to enjoy. There's also some interesting trades this week. The newest Avatar and Last Airbender series, this is Katara and the Pirate Silver. I guess this is when the team is ambushed by Fire Nation. This is like during the Avatar stuff. The most of it's been after.
Okay.
This is during. This is before Prince... What's his name?
Zuko.
This is before Zuko joins them. So Aang, Toph, and Sokka are off on an adventure. Katara winds up having to throw him with some pirates.
Okay. That sounds like...
kind of fun.
I'm down with that story.
Rainbow Rowell, who has been doing the Runaways series, her novel's being adapted into a manga called Fangirl.
And she made her name as a novelist, right?
Yep. She's a YA novelist.
Yep.
Naoki Urasawa, who's a manga artist who does monster.
He does some sort of sophisticated thriller, yeah. Suspense thriller manga, and is like really a remarkable artist. I have to say.
So he has a
I didn't know that there was something new from him.
Anthology short stories called Sneeze.
Okay.
Out this week.
Is it suspensey stuff, or do we know?
It looks like a mix of stuff.
Okay, I'll have to take a peek at that later.
More lighter in tone.
It's hard for me to imagine from him.
Yeah, there is a graphic novel from Oni called Little Witches, which is indeed Little Women as imagined, as the girls are witches instead.
Right. So it's Little Women meets The Craft.
There you go. there is the first volume of Al Ewing's Guardians of the Galaxy, and then there is the. Graphic novel we've been quoting for like a month.
Cover the kids' ears, y'all.
It's an image book, and it is called Dracula, motherfucker. It's Alex DeCampi and Squirrel Girl's Erica Henderson. I honestly have no idea what it's about except for Dracula, motherfucker.
Yeah, well, it's a great title. Alex DeCampi's been a decent writer. That artist is a great artist,
yep.
So it sounds like it could be worth it.
Also, there is a combined Doomsday Clock trade that has both volumes in it.
Yep, you can finally get the whole, all 12 issues of Doomsday Clock, a.k.a. Watchmen versus DC.
The whole Megilla, as they say.
I guess.
The full banana.
The full banana Megilla.
The giant Rakshasa. I don't know, I'm just making stuff up now. all right. Dave, do you have anything else on your list, or is that everything?
I think that's kind of all the big stuff.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and then we will come back and talk about
scary movies,
horror movies. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so we are well and truly into October now, and weirdly, while Dave, I think you and Nick are more the horror mavens in this place.
Not comfortable with the word maven, but yes.
Mavets? Mivens? Mixins.
Mavericks.
The horror mavericks. You and Nick are the horror mavericks.
Yes. You have been regimentedly watching, as you do. You probably drew up a list, which I know you do.
Yes.
And then you executed the plan, which is what you do.
Yes, yeah, so that is my thing. You guys watch horror movies, I make lists.
Yes.
And in October, I make a list of all the horror movies I've been wanting to see. I got a Shudder subscription for the month.
And you have a theme going on.
I watched, since I had Shudder.
Yes.
Y'all had recommended and talked about previously on this podcast, Host.
Yes, the Zoom horror.
Which I thought was like going to be a Korean movie. But there is a Korean host. It's not the Bong Joon-ho one, or
right?
Whatever, but I knew it wasn't that one. But I thought this also was a Korean horror movie.
Yeah, no. If anything, I think
British.
Most of the people in it are like have like English or Aussie accents.
It's British,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but then somebody was like, oh, is it? They were like saying that it was like just a few Brits and like everybody else was American, but I don't know. I thought either. They were mostly... I had to turn on the subtitles.
Yeah, me too. anyway, this is a horror movie about a bunch of friends. It's about an hour long.
Yeah.
Which I love a good hour long movie. Like give me a tight hour. I'm perfect.
And it is literally set in quarantine.
Yeah. So these friends decide to have a seance, which, by the way, terrible idea.
Perfectly good idea. Ghosts aren't real. Seances won't summon anything.
So here's the thing. This is the thing you should know about me and Dave. I am a skeptic, just like Dave. Like, I don't really believe in ghosts.
But you don't want to test it?
I can watch these movies. I've been watching the Insidious series at like 1200 at night and going right to bed. Like, it doesn't bother me. I live in Trump world. I'm not scared of ghosts. There are way scarier things in the real world.
Yeah.
But that said, I also don't believe in tempting fate. Whereas Dave is the person who's like, no, man, that doesn't happen.
I am the guy who would be the skeptic in the movies who gets killed.
Oh, 100%,
However, luckily, real life is not the movies, and so it hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
I'm waiting for that fun experience of getting killed by my skepticism. that said, they are... these are mostly women.
Yeah.
And, like, their one, like, dude friend. Randy, to me, the thing I like in, like, a found footage movie, which that's what this functions as.
Yeah, it does.
Is that the characters, I like it when they feel real. Like, not like they're actors acting a role, but, like, kind of things that real people would say and do. But, you know, usually they're just maybe a little more interesting or lively. But I thought that they really accomplished it with this. The people felt real to me.
Yeah, they did.
The way they kind of joke like, around about
they feel
it.
Feel like old friends. You feel like you're seeing inside jokes that they have.
Yep.
Like, their buddy and his girlfriend that they all hate, who clearly seems to be the worst.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm watching this, and and it gets about this. They decide to do a seance. They bring in this. One of them knows a woman who's like a medium. And they bring her in, and then they're being kind of, the guy's kind of a jerk about it. Doesn't take it seriously. Drops off the call. And they're all like, oh, I can't believe that.
Yeah, they have actually, like, normal Zoom problems,
yeah.
Including people coming and going or, like, a technical issue here and there.
And then about halfway through, we're about 30 minutes in, I turn to my kid who's watching with me. I'm like, we're halfway in. Something's got to start happening pretty soon. And then it does.
Yeah.
Like, the ghost stuff accelerates fast.
Yeah.
And it's creepy and effective, and they make good use of the way the screens work.
The way... The actual premise for it,
yeah.
That the way sort of a prank ends up setting up what happens,
yeah.
Is very creepy to me.
It is.
So that when the lady who's conducting the seance, the medium, is like, you did what?
Yeah,
you know,
you
I'm like,
into existence.
Yeah, it's a cool concept the way they do it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's really scary. It's really good, and it's an hour. I would highly recommend everybody give it a watch if you have Shudder.
Yeah, and you know they do have the free week or month if you can pull it off like Randy did.
There's a code for a free month.
Yeah, bastards.
And then despite the fact that I have like 6 streaming services and more horror that I can watch in a month, I went ahead and bought the Insidious series for like $30 to get all 4 movies because I've been wanting to watch this and I'm a fan of Lee Whannell who did Invisible Man and Upgrade.
Right.
So I became a fan of his after his month.
Upgrade, which was like a sci-fi kind of thing.
It's sci-fi, but it's got horror elements to it, too.
I guess so, yeah. Like, horror is his main place, but like, that was a little bit off the beaten path for him.
But I like both of those quite a bit, and I think he wrote and directed both of those. Mm-hmm. And then I started looking back into his run, and I saw, oh, this guy is basically the co-creator of the Insidious series,
right.
Along with James Wan.
He wrote them all and took over directing basically after James Wan left.
Yep. So I decided to watch it. Here's the one thing, Dave, you and I have talked about Insidious, Sinister, whatever, these like
Conjuring.
Conjuring, like, none of these tell you anything about the movies.
Right. They.
That's a flaw, but it's also, it's actually also a good thing because I had no idea what I was walking into.
Yeah. That is actually one thing I do kind of admit I like about those things, and I've had that experience in the theater with most of them, is I'm like, the ads look scary or whatever, but I really don't quite know what I'm getting into.
Like, if they had called this The Further, or something like that, or Into The Further, or something like that, I still wouldn't have known, but I'm glad they didn't. I kind of like that there's no indication what it is. But basically, for those who don't know, it is about a family, a mom, a dad, and some kids. One of their kids has what seems like an accident, one's been a coma.
Yep.
And then it seems like maybe there's some ghost activity.
Yep. There is a sequence, if I'm not mistaken, where one of the other kids in the family talks about, like, at night, what doesn't he say, like, at night his, like, brother gets up and, like, claws at his door or comes to his door?
Yeah.
And it was such, like, it's so creepy.
Yeah.
The first half of the movie, it actually gets a little out there in the second half.
It does.
And for the record, I actually believe I did read that this is like a literal sort of hat tip to Poltergeist, which is to say begins with slow haunting and builds to something quite larger than life that involves like bridging the world between the living and the dead.
Yeah.
And like literally you, but instead of where Poltergeist, you never see that other side, here you see the other side.
And I actually love it. They do some, there's a lot of jump scares in this.
Yes.
And it's a lot of like scary moments. Like this gives me goosebumps in a way that very few horror movie series do.
Yeah.
Like it's not just scares. It's like literally the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. It's really effective.
Yeah.
Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne play the, Rose Byrne?
Maybe.
I think so. Play the two leads, the married couple. Patrick Wilson in particular has a pretty interesting arc throughout the first two.
Yep.
But the one who sort of steals the movies and becomes the lead in the two prequels, which is the finale, which is the last two, is Elise, played by I forget her name.
She's she's a comedy actress. She started out doing like comedy stuff, like American Pie, I think, and some other stuff like that. She was basically the old lady in movies.
Yeah,
and then she became the cool old lady, she had a pedigree in other horror movies too. So she is in her weird way is a scream queen.
That makes sense. So. She is, her character's name is Elise, and her name is Lynn Shay.
Lynn Shay, yeah, it's a pretty memorable name.
And she is joined by, she's like this ghost, this medium they call in, and she has these two guys who are like her ghost hunter, backup.
Yeah, they're kind of like the tech guys who do like, set up all the video equipment and all that stuff.
Specs, played by Lee Whannell.
Right.
And, Tucker, played by Angus Sampson, who, you might know from like a season of Fargo, but he looks like he's sort of this big swaggering bearded guy.
Is he the American Nick Frost?
Yeah, he might be.
he's a little Nick Frosty.
He's a delight. I love those two. I love these two. I love her. And when they bring her in, like the movie changes, and I think I fell completely in love with the series.
Yeah, she has a certain. For lack of a better word, she would be the equivalent a little bit of oh my gosh, I'm not going to remember the character name, but the old medium in Poltergeist, short woman, but if that woman kind of became the star, she's got a little bit of swagger in the sense that like she's not going to be cowed by these things, but it doesn't mean that there aren't scary times and intimidating moments.
Oh, she still gets scared by them,
right. Here's this 70-year-old woman who's the star of like one of the scariest movie series there are.
Yeah. I kept watching. I watched the first one, really loved it. It ends on a big old cliffhanger.
Yes.
And then two rolls right out of it, and then two also ends in a cliffhanger, which doesn't get fully resolved.
Right. To some degree, that is where the series is left hanging, because the other ones are sort of prequels.
And they go back to her childhood.
Yep.
And they
do also see when she kind of first meets up with the ghost hunter type guys. Yep.
And those are all really good. I know some people are not as big on the later ones, but I loved all of these.
Yeah, I do too, and I guess what happened is I kind of liked the later ones for slightly different reasons than the earlier ones. There's just some terrifying stuff to me in the third one.
Yeah.
Randy, you pointed out, there's a sequence where the girl, she's what, high school girl?
Yeah.
Who's been seeing these kind of scary things, but she gets hit by a car and like gets her like leg badly broken, and so she's like, in like just the most horrible situation you can imagine, where there is something creepy and horrible going on in her house,
and can't escape.
She can't move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's really effective.
There's some very good stuff in there.
And Lee Whannell is one of my guys that I follow. I know Dave, you're a big fan of James Wan in general.
Yep.
I am more hit and miss on James Wan, but I liked this. The other person who's my horror go to right now is Mike Flanagan.
Right, and that was a name that I just started I started realizing over the last few years. That some of the stuff that I liked, I was like, oh, that's that guy? Oh, it's the same guy who I liked on this?
Yeah.
And he's a guy who, for lack of a better word, he's like a writer and director. He's directed a couple Stephen King adaptations. Mm-hmm. He did Dr. Sleep and also
Gerald's Game. Both of which I watched this last couple weeks.
And he has a lot in common with Stephen King, which is, Randy, wouldn't you say he kind of does this kind of humanistic horror?
Yeah, he's all about character stuff. That's a big part of it.
And if you watch Haunting of Hill House, which was like his big Netflix thing.
I was going to say, that's where I first became aware of him, was watching Haunting of Hill House, which is amazing.
Yeah, that he, he has a fascination sort of, like you said, these characters, these kind of gothic things, but he also can do scary.
Yeah.
He can do scary quite well.
For sure.
I think as good when he wants to as, like, the Insidious guys can. Randy, let's quick cycle through. What'd you watch?
So, I don't know if I talked about this one, but I did watch Absentia, which is, like, an early movie of his. It's on Hush.
Yeah. Yep.
Or on Shudder, rather.
Woman whose husband has been missing 7 years.
Yeah, so she's about to declare him dead in absentia, and then he, like, turns back up, but there's also this weird, like, crow ghost.
Yes. Is it scary? It's like a scary little indie horror movie. Yeah.
I like that one quite a bit.
And also, again, very character-driven. There's, like, is it her sister who's staying with her, too?
With her.
And she's got, like, substance abuse problems.
Yeah, she's basically coming off drugs, and then her sister doesn't entirely trust her sister.
Yeah.
And when she starts saying that stuff went wrong, her sister doesn't believe her.
If you liked, like, I think a lot of people watched Haunting of Hill House, mm-hmm. and if you liked how they handled, like, say, Luke's story, those kind of things, those elements of, like, these kind of broken people, this is something he's good at in all of his movies. Absentia is a good little start.
And then just going in order of the stuff that was released.
Yeah.
I watched Oculus last night.
Yep.
Which is about a haunted mirror. Stars Karen Gillan. It's like a brother-sister thing.
Yep.
Flashes back to their childhood trauma with the mirror and then their modern-day thing. And I really loved it. I thought maybe one of my favorite things he's done.
It's one of those movies that there's not too many movies I can say, oh, this is like blank.
Yeah.
Because, like, the premise is kind of weird and hard to describe. I guess... It maybe plays out like a haunted house thing.
It does. It's got bits and pieces of what works in Haunting of Hill House, where it's about family trauma and about haunting.
Right.
But it's interesting because the pitch of it is early on, you find out that she's like, we have to destroy this mirror, and she has spent, like, all her life since she was a teenager figuring out how to do this. And so she's got all these plans of, like, well, I've got a bunch of alarm clocks, I've got water... Here's the 13 deaths that are over the period, and here's how they died, so I'm making sure I'm avoiding that. I've got a self-destruct in place in case the mirror tries to kill us. Like, she is, like, doing all the planning stuff.
Yeah.
I love a horror movie where the protagonists are super smart.
Yep.
And that was one of the things this did really well.
My favorite version of that is the less horror and more suspense, Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah.
Which I think has, like, the sharpest hero I've seen in a movie, basically, with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And I love her character in that. But, this is one that I'd like to revisit. What I remember is when I first watched it, that it didn't quite live up to whatever I thought I was getting, but I also I didn't know Mike Flanagan at the time, and I know that there's, like, stuff about his movies that I appreciate.
Yeah.
I definitely remember that no matter what, I knew it had a story to tell, and I like a horror movie that's not just some crap-ass slasher. I like him to want to go somewhere and to have some characters with some depth.
The tail end of it is pretty horrific, and there's some moments where I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And there's, like, not just, he does body horror really well, there's a couple things in there. But also, like, there's some reveals at the end where I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. When horror can make that kind of, can make your stomach drop out like that, that's something I love.
Then I watched Hush, which is the movie he made right after Oculus. It was about 3 years later. And this is a sort of a home invasion movie. I don't want to give too much away, but basically it's about a woman who is deaf and mute.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a home invasion element going on there. It's really, really good.
People who know that I have a lot of distaste for home invasion stuff, which is almost... I'm not a fan.
The
only one that had surprised me prior to this was The Purge, which rightfully was not just a cheesy home invasion movie. It had something to say. And people have told me many times that Hush has something, has a story to tell too, and so I know I'm going to watch this soon.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not saying too much about it, except to say I really enjoyed it. A lot of my friends recommended it to me. And then I finally watched Gerald's Game, which Dave and Nick have talked about numerous times on this podcast. This was the Carla Gugino showpiece.
Yep.
Where she's like, she basically is trapped in handcuffs by her husband.
Yeah, a kinky weekend in a cabin goes wrong when he basically suffers like a heart attack and like dies, but with her handcuffed to the bed, both hands, completely immobile, and nobody knows where they were.
Yeah. And then he sort of, his like ghostly presence torments her, while her ghostly presence like... boosts her, like she basically play off each other.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of flashbacks in it. I remember when I heard the premise, I'm like, well, is it literally just like 2 hours or an hour and a half of a person in a room trying to figure things out? I'm like, that could work. I have seen very focused movies like Alfred Hitchcock's Rope, but that had lots of characters, and I was like, how do you do it with one person? And part of the answer is that King found some clever ways around that, like having her talk to somebody who's like a, if not a literal ghost, is an embodiment of, like, the person her husband was.
Right, yeah.
And there's, like a gothic novel, there's secrets to be revealed, there's suspense to be had. There's a scene that I believe made you wince as much as it made me wince.
Yeah, this is the body horror stuff, man. He does that well.
I've never cringed harder than that scene.
It's really good. I love Carla Gugino. I think it's one of her best roles.
And also, I got to give props to
Greenwood,
Bruce Greenwood. Yeah, as the gaunt, long gone husband,
the mean ghost.
Yep.
then there's Haunting of Hill House, which Dave, I know you're making your way through.
Yes. So I was late to the party on this one. What is this? A year or two old? Couple, two, 3 years? 2018. Yeah. But I'm loving it. It's so good. You know, I'm almost a little sad to be. I'm going to finish watching it in the next day or two. What was it? 10 episodes, I think.
I think it might be.
It is 10.
Is it 10? Okay.
Yeah. So there's actually a fair amount of content to it. Like, you know, that's 10 hours of material. But because it is a sort of sprawling story with a large cast of family members, mm-hmm. I think it is very loosely inspired by
Shirley Jackson's story
that was of the same name.
Yep.
And just as the next one, as I guess The Haunting of Bly Manor was like loosely inspired by The Turn of the Screw.
Yeah.
It is a combination of extremely scary, very heartfelt. Like, yeah. There's times I've got tears watching this, yep. And I love all the characters. They're It's interesting because, like, on any given episode, I can find myself sort of more drawn to one character than the other. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, this is the one I really like. This person seems to be the best person. And then I'll see them in another episode when they're, like, at their worst, at their lowest ebb. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, man, I see why they kind of turned on him. And it's got this really rich... It reminded me of the kind of the Stephen King, the big books, like The Stand or It.
Yeah.
And the way... You see this tapestry unfold over time, especially, you know, it covers them from kids to adults. And I can see that King influence, but he has found his own voice. You know, he is not some just parrot of King's style. And as long as it ends even halfway decently, this is probably going to be one of the coolest horror things I've watched in years.
I really liked it. The ending is not perfect for me, but it's good.
Yeah, I will be interested to talk it over once I've seen it.
And then the last thing I watched, as far as Mike Flanagan stuff goes, is Dr. Sleep.
Oh, right.
Which y'all had talked up, and I like The Shining. That's one of the horror movie I really liked.
Yep.
And I liked the trailers for this, but I just kind of never got around to seeing it. And I'm really glad that I watched it. It may be my favorite thing I watched. It's up there with, like, it's between this and Oculus, probably, between mm-hmm. the two things I watched of all this stuff. But, man... Ewan McGregor's great.
Yep.
The recasting of the younger Shining people really, really works.
Yeah. Who's who played Scatman Crothers' role?
I don't remember.
It's that guy who was from Alias.
Is it Carl Lumley?
It's Carl Lumley.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Carl Lumley plays, Doc Halloran? Is that his name? I think.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. Anyway, the Scatman Crothers' role from the original one, and yeah, it follows Danny as an adult who's yep. through the because of the kids the experiences he's had, he had fallen into like bad substance abuse
yeah.
and is like trying to claw his way out of that. Even as another story is rising up about a young girl who's got a powerful shining herself,
yeah.
And it turns out that there is this like network of like kind of creepy predatory
nomads
like who like absorb the life force of people who have the shining
in messy horrible ways
and use it to extend their own lifetime.
Yeah.
Some of which, like the patriarch of them, they say like he saw like Rome burn or something right, like that right. at some point.
And their main lead on that, Rebecca Ferguson, plays character she's, Rose, I think.
Yeah, she's a great villainess.
She's great, and I love her. She's been in she's in Mission Impossible movies, and she's in Greatest Show, and I really like her in this.
It's a pretty unpredictable story, too.
It is, yeah.
With the heroes sometimes doing some very smart things, like something I'm like, oh wow, they just did that?
Yep. Yeah, I thought this was fantastic, and people keep saying I should watch the director's cut, so I'll probably go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, I need to watch the director's cut, too.
But yeah, super good. Mike Flanagan stuff, totally worth a look. Haunting of Bly Manor is on right now, and I'm about 4 episodes into it, so, definitely.
There is stuff, yeah, people should, like, go ahead and do that. I think people would find it rewarding if they like that basic style.
Yeah.
And if you're a Freddy Krueger person, I can't help you. You might not be into
it. None of us can help.
But if you like your horror with some heart and some depth to it, and usually some really good scares, too.
Yeah.
Then it is worth trying out some of these other ones that you haven't seen, I think.
Yeah. Mike Flanagan, Insidious, and also we didn't talk about, but Conjuring, the Conjuring series.
Yeah.
Although I've only seen the 1 and 2, I know you are very mixed on the Annabelle Creation,
right,
and all the other spinoffs.
Yeah. Although every once in a while, like the very last one that came out was like Annabelle Comes Home.
Yeah.
And like somehow that kind of like, in the same way that another Flanagan movie, I think you haven't seen, the Ouija movie.
Yeah.
The first Ouija movie was just an awful crap fest. The second one was essentially a soft reboot.
Yeah.
Like, I think it must have done just well enough. A lot of times horror movies are low budget, high, yeah, so any profit they make is pretty good.
Right.
And I think they were like, all right, so let's do another one. And or maybe even Flanagan pitched it to him or whatever. But it has nothing to do with the first one other than there's going to be scary Ouija board shit in it. But it is a ton of fun. Like, Randy, I think you're going to like it as a kind of more fun but scary
it's
outing.
It's the only one that's not streaming, so it may have to wait till next Halloween.
It'll keep. It'll keep. But it's good.
But yeah. All right, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and with more Nick.
Yes, 100% no more Nick.
100% more Nick. And until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.